Siren
107.3.
Excellent. And the weather today, highs of 5 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a dry, cold day with some good spells of sunshine. Shaylee McKenzie, it's almost that time where really we should be seeking a good cup of tea or a good cup of coffee, I feel, in many ways. And
a cup of coffee that I'm drinking right now.
Oh, but is it Lincoln tea and coffee that we're actually
Unfortunately,
using?
Unfortunately,
oh, no. Oh, please. Award-winning suppliers are the finest tea and coffee, providing the best quality loose-leaf tea and freshly roasted coffee. We were delighted to meet up with the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, actually back in the December period. Or was it October? Anyway, it was the Food and Gift Fair.
What a pleasant event.
You were there as well. And we're now delighted to welcome Susie Carlisle, director of the aforementioned Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, with us today. Susie, how are you?
Oh, very well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, this is almost, I would suggest, a possible ideal job in many ways, because presumably you get to sample the quality of the material that you use for import as well.
That's right. Yeah, it's a nice job. I love tea and coffee, so I have to say it's fun all day, every day, really.
Excellent. So, in terms of the system itself, we're looking at the website now. We're looking at the lines of our tea and coffee, and we're seeing a whole heap of award-winning tea and coffee suppliers that's coming through there. Now, Shaylee, tea or coffee? Which one do you want to look at first?
Let's go coffee.
Coffee. Coffee is roasted, packaged to very high standard. You've got a range of things. Share with us, Susie, some of the wonderful things about the coffee that's there, and also how people can actually locate it as well, apart from going to the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company.co.uk on the web.
The coffee side, well, as a company, we're mainly sort of a wholesale company. So we would deal with our commercial customers and they would make that coffee and sell it to their customers. So, for example, we've got a few coffee shops around the county who would be selling coffee, and the feedback for that coffee is amazing. And, like, for example, we've got a Sweet Brazil, which is a nice sweet blend. It's just doing really well, and we're constantly receiving positive comments.
Now, I see you've got Food, Drink and Hospitality Awards 2006, winner of Wholesaler of the Year, highly commended for 2015, 2016 as well. Love Food, Select Lincolnshire, that's actually there. What kind of guided yourself to set up the company and become a director of the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, Susie?
Passion is tea and coffee, pure and simple, really. Something that I've always loved and felt very passionate about, something we've always enjoyed. Quality coffee, quality tea, sitting around the table, making a pot of tea as a family, as a child, we would have done that. That continued through, into adulthood. And it's just something that I feel really passionate about, and then just set the company up just to share that and to supply quality goods so that other people can enjoy it.
Shaylee.
I agree. I can remember as a child, my mum would always have a cup of tea after dinner and I would have to make this tea. And it's almost like an after dinner ritual in our household. And then as I got older, I sort of developed a taste for coffee. Because when you're a kid, coffee's just like, ugh, it's not a nice taste. But and then I actually got into making coffee. So passion for me lies in coffee, although I am a huge tea drinker, especially Redbush tea is a massive favourite of mine.
Yeah, that's a really nice tea, and obviously naturally caffeine-free.
Yeah.
So it's enjoyed by a lot of people. And I think you're right. I think we do sort of, maybe to start out with tea, we don't like to sort of give children coffee. At my children, for example, they would have been happy as a small child to sit around and we would have enjoyed a pot of tea and some cake. Even now in their teenage years, they're still big fans of tea. Maybe one day go on to enjoy the coffee side too.
There are few hours in life more agreeable than the hour dedicated to the ceremony known as afternoon tea, as Henry James was supposed to say.
Oh, that's a nice quote, yeah.
And comes directly from the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company.co.uk website. Now, Will Battle is somebody who's the author of the World's Tea Encyclopedia, and I believe that actually he's also connected with you in some way, shape or form, Susie?
We are very lucky to sort of have Will, and he's actually in the county here, so we So we met up with Will about a year ago, and we'd always wanted to develop a tea that would work well with our hard water. So we started discussions with Will, and so we've been very, very fortunate to work with him for about a year, and to look at blends and tastings, and just share his benefit from his knowledge. Really, he's travelled the tea world and still does. So plantations visited, and so he was the perfect chap for us to team up with, and to sort of benefit from and get his opinion and sort of share his knowledge.
How exciting! Yeah, definitely.
In terms of if someone was to actually push you and say, Susie, would you go tea? Would you go coffee? Where's your particular preference?
That's a tricky question. I'm asked that quite a lot, and they, I mean, maybe it's a fashion. I'll go through phases where I'll drink a lot of coffee. Then I'll be concentrating on tea, so I'll drink a lot of tea. First drink in the morning for me is a coffee. That's always the way. I always drink our sweet Brazil first thing in the morning every day. And then the day moves on and I start to think, oh, I could really enjoy a cup of tea now. So I'll move on to tea. So for me, I'm both. Right down the middle, it just depends on what I'm doing, how I feel, what time of day it is, what I'm about to eat. I very much like to team up what I'm going to drink with what I'm going to eat. So if I'm eating certain foods, I might like a smoked tea. If I eat, a slice of cake, a lovely cup of tea, like the Lincolnshire tea is my favourite with the slice of cake. So yeah, it really does sort of depend on what I'm doing.
Something I was talking about earlier in the programme, Susie, was the notion of green tea and white tea. Now, white tea, I often think, surely that's just boiling water, isn't it? What about, I know it's supposed to be very health-giving and infusing from that perspective, but any thoughts on the white tea, green tea debate?
I mean, I think you'll always have people who look into what's good for them. You'll have people who like the flavour. Some people really drink a lot of, some people do drink a lot of green tea and they love it. Other people will say to me, your green tea, can you tell me how to make it? Because I don't enjoy it, but other people do enjoy it. So what am I doing wrong? And we'll sort of say, well, experiment with infusion times, because green tea is one of those things. If you make it and you let it infuse for a long time, it gets stronger and stronger and can turn quite bitter, because of course you wouldn't sort of have milk in that tea. So we would just say, just experiment, find out what you like. And so really, I mean, it's one of those things, it's personal. There is such a lot in the press. So you sort of read it, you look at evidence, and then you sort of decide for yourself, I think, like a lot of things within the tea and coffee industry.
If folk are actually listening to this thinking that this woman obviously knows her tea from her and her coffee from that point of view, well, of course, she's award-winning tea and coffee suppliers. And interesting that you're also available as a consultant in terms of the full sort of package for companies who are wanting to create businesses, menus. I love the line from educating your customers on the fine teas you'll be supplying to advising which teas accompany different foods. For example, a tea to suit a smoked salmon sandwich or indeed a delicate cucumber sandwich.
Yeah, that's right. That's something that we are doing more and more of now. So established businesses who just want to chat about new menus or look at developing maybe an afternoon tea menu, brand new businesses who need equipment, advice, or just even layout of how the coffee kitchen sort of will work, anything like that, from sort of startups through to experienced businesses, we're always here. And one thing we're happy to do is always talk tea and coffee. So anybody who needs advice, then we're always, always available. And it's a hand-holding, we like to think, service that we offer.
Well, I know, Shayla, you were very excited when last week I said we're having
definitely.
Susie Carlisle, Director of the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, on. So it's great stuff. I love the vehicle as well, the wholesale and retail Lincoln Tea and Coffee white vehicle that you've actually got there on the website, which it looks as though it's actually moving uphill. I think it's just the angle of the photograph that's been taken
nice.
There. It's genius stuff.
Though. I actually have a question. Do you just have like a shop or something where like the individual can buy from?
How can we
from?
Get in touch with you guys? How can we come and see you?
because we do tend to sell to commercial customers, what we like to do is to promote where the goods are available. So our coffee and tea both are available through our customers. So, for example, if you go on the Lincolnshire Tea website, so that's the lincolnshiretea.co.uk website, there's a page on there that will say, where is this available? And what we are doing is we are listing each and every stockist of that product. And as that grows, we I mean, it was only launched last week in the sort of retail tubes, then we're updating that on a regular basis. We're in discussions at the moment with the co-op, and as from next week, we are expecting that to go out into 10 outlets of the co-op, and they will, as soon as that happens, that will appear on the website. For example, we've had a lot of inquiries in the last few days about it being available online. So Uncle Henry's are going to be adding it to their online store, and as soon as we get the confirmation that that's happened, then we will share that. So, yeah, it's all about our customers will be selling our products, and if anybody inquires, we will let you know where your nearest stockist is.
As a resident of the Balegate, I'm very, very happy to see that you stock the Balegate Deli, which was one of my favourite delis.
Yes, it's fabulous.
And in addition to that, shameless product placement endorsement, it's okay, don't worry. The Lincoln City Football Club, and we know how successful they've actually been, they started working with you at the start of the 2016-2017 season, quarterfinal of the FA Cup. Yeah, you just have to look at the whole thing, effectively, from that point of view. And the quote, Susie's knowledge and enthusiasm for all the products stood out, and the attention to detail, outstanding. Marvellous stuff. Susie, we knew it was going to be a win-win situation. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for yourself?
It's been great. Thank you ever so much for sharing the information and news of Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company and the Lincolnshire Tea. It's been brilliant. Thank you very much.
Well, the next critical question is, can we prevail upon you to return and maybe actually provide some input in terms of, yes, this sort of notion of what makes the appropriate tea, what makes the appropriate coffee? Because I think this could be just the start of some critical customer research that we're looking for. Will you be happy to return?
Absolutely. Would love to. Thank you.
Goes to the valley below. It's okay. Whatever sees you through, White Stripes, whatever sees you through. It's 17 minutes past 9 a.m. here as far as Siren Radio is actually concerned, and we'll be going in a matter of seconds to speak to Joe Loughran, actually. Susie Carlisle is actually gone, and Sue Baker from Time to Change actually had to make alternative routines, but we're still talking with a fantastic soul who'll be talking about Time to Change, director of Time to Change, because it is what day today, apart from Thursday, Shaylee, it is
a time to talk, a day to talk.
It is time to talk day, and that is what we're doing.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces. Only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me. Can't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave. Tears, black for the night.
And maybe, just maybe, that's one of the challenges in terms of people not wanting to talk about issues relating to mental health and conversations regarding this and so on. We've talked earlier in the programme about Time to Talk Day. We're delighted now to be able to welcome one of the directors of Time to Change, the wonderful Jo Loughran. Good morning, Jo. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent. Very good indeed. Now, this particular day, which many people say, why do we need to have a special Time to Talk Day in terms of working through this? I'm astounded by the findings that you come out with the notions that people are finding it really difficult to talk about problems such as mental health, such as finance. That right time, right place, that campaign. Share with us about why you decided it was important to make this a public issue.
Well, we've been working on Time to Change. We've been working to challenge stigma and discrimination for the last 10 years. And for the last five, we've really concentrated on trying to get the nation talking about the topic of mental health, because we know that's one of the most the easiest ways, in many ways, to challenge stigma and discrimination. You'll have experienced this, I'm sure, but I talk about my job quite a lot. I'm quite proud of it. But oftentimes what happens is you talk about the fact that you work in a mental health charity and somebody next to you says, oh, yeah, well, I've actually experienced mental health, or I know somebody who has. And it's almost like you have that permission to be able to talk about the topic because somebody's brought it up in a non-judgmental setting. So today, in Time to Talk Day, we're really encouraging the nation to talk about the topic and be open to the topic of mental health.
I've already given credit to Virgin Trains, Highways England, PG Tips and other sort of systems. You really managed to get good partners here. See Me Scotland, Change Your Mind Northern Ireland and Time to Change Wales. So it is very much a UK-wide day that we're having today.
Yeah, we're really proud of that, actually. This is the first of the 5 years that we've been able to make it a truly sort of national day. So it's really great. And there's loads of activities happening out there. Over 2,500 workplaces will be hosting their own activities. And we know we've got over 800 secondary schools who will take part as well. And we've got our amazing champions, people who have got personal experience of mental health problems and who want to use that experience for the positive, to work with other people to talk about the topic of mental health, because we know it's important, we know it's as important as our physical health, and we know that if we start conversations we can positively change the lives of those of us who are experiencing mental health problems.
Shaylee, as a young soul, any questions or thoughts from yourself?
I'm just really, really happy that it's actually being opened up, and we do need that non-judgmental setting to be able to speak about the stigma behind mental health, because it is very, very stigmatized. It's not sort of accepted into society. And as a sufferer of anxiety, it took me ages to actually be able to accept it and then talk about it. But it's almost once you accept that you do suffer from a mental illness, you can then tell other people about it.
Sorry, we're just waiting for a response then from Jo.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Yes.
And I think that's so spot on, isn't it? And when you're in that experience, it's so incredibly difficult. And what we know is over the last 10 years, we've seen some really positive changes in people's attitude and experience of opening up and talking about mental health. So behaviours are changing, but we talk about this often as a change in a generation. And we've still got a way to go before we get to that kind of tipping point. But it's because of people like you opening up, talking about it and be willing to be out there that we will change this status quo. And in the future, we won't need to talk about the stigma and discrimination associated with mental health problems.
I definitely agree about the generation thing, because growing up in a middle class family, we never really spoke about how we felt. It was sort of just brushed under the carpet. But yeah, no, it's definitely a generation thing, I think.
And is it also perhaps connected with the notion of technologies that are actually there? Sometimes we find if we're engaging with the mobile devices, etc., we kind of miss out on that face-to-face thing. So we do almost make other excuses for saying, oh, yeah, we'll do some texting, etc. And it's not quite the same, really, Jo, as a face-to-face chat, is it?
It, well, interestingly, yes and no. And I think it's really making sure that whatever medium you want to use, the important thing is to have the conversation. So Carl, who has depression and is one of our supporters, he talks about the fact that he finds it easiest to talk to his friends about his experience via text and email. So for him, that absolutely works. And he's part of a group that talk to each other about mental health through gaming, actually. So again, you're combining the kind of distraction activity with the ability to be able to talk about it, and that really works for him. So it's a bit of both. It really is. It's whatever is good for you.
Blended communication. Perhaps we can actually use that. Let's just have blended tea, blended coffee, and work through the process. Joe, where can people find out more details about Time to Talk Day if they want to follow through with this whole thing? Obviously, we've said we've already started. We've had this wonderful walkie-talkie building that's started off from that point of view. We've got Stephen Fry, Fern Cotton, Frankie Bridge, Harry Judd, and so on. But in terms of Lincoln, England, and other sort of parts of the UK, what's the best place to go to actually find out details about Time to Talk Day? And then Time to Change.
Well, for Time to Change, it's time-to-change.org.uk. If to support Time to Talk Day, take a picture of what you're doing. Where are you having your conversation? Post it on your social media, whatever you use, using the hashtag Time to Talk. And that is how you can get absolutely engaged with what we're doing across the country.
It's also ideal to be having these conversations on the radio, probably the ideal medium and mode for telephonic conversations. Joe, it's been lovely talking to yourself today. I'm sure you'll be an awful lot more talking as the day proceeds. But once again, many thanks, and I'm sure we'll speak again in the very near future. Take care now.
Thank you.
Talking loud and clear, saying just what you feel.
Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, OMD, talking loud and clear. Quite right too. It's for Thursday, February the 1st, 2018. But only for a few more hours. Later on today, of course, we've got Chris Clarkson doing another sensational drive time between 5 and 7. And then after 7 o'clock, it will be Sound and Nick's Vision with Nick Elliott and Kat and Sue Royce doing all manner of wonderful things. I think it's a funk special that they've actually got to do all manner of things with, etc.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Monster hunter and director of the Centre for Fortean Zoology, John Downs, is the person who's coming to connect with us next. And there is that opportunity, of course, to conceivably win 50,000 pounds. I mean, not that money is everything, but it would probably, you know, it would help, you know, keep us going, I suppose.
Pay off your mortgage with that,
basically. Tea and coffee. Well, a small mortgage, perhaps, yeah. But it's a thought.
In this day and age.
Daydream, I fell asleep amid the flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day. Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day. The flowers for a couple of hours on a beautiful day. Daydream, I dream of you amid the flowers for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day.
When you actually are the founder and director of the Centre for Fortean Zoology, the world's largest cryptozoological research organisation, clearly you know something when it comes to animal mystery creatures, bizarre entities, paranormal entities and so on. And accordingly, you're probably the best person to actually analyse the evidence that's going to be submitted for a £50,000 reward. Yes, we're going monster hunting, and who better than a real-life monster hunter, John Downs, to talk about the excitement that's going to be forthcoming across the globe, I'm sure. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Alex.
Excellent. Now, I'm well aware of the 14 times Charles Fort, who knew what he was starting when he came up with this regular monthly magazine of the bizarre and the unheard of and so on. Cryptozoology, of course, is rooted in the whole notion of this, the notion of the unusual and so on. But in these days of social media and mass communications and so on, surely Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Yeti, the Mongolian Death Worm, they can't hide from us, can they?
Well, the searching for all of them continues, and each year we get slightly closer to being able to find definitive evidence for them.
They could, of course, be aliens from another planet. I'm not sure that theory has been put forward. I'm sure it has in some way, shape or form. But
Yes, it has. But although I'm sure that there is intelligent and non-intelligent life somewhere else in the universe, because it is infinitely big, it's also going to be a heck of a long way away. And I think the idea that aliens managed to come to this planet in order to probe the bottoms of farmers in Kansas.
Steady,
I think,
John.
It's unlikely.
Well, exactly. Maybe they've just left a friend with Loch Ness to actually work through that. I gather recently, actually, Loch Ness Monster was seen in another part of Europe, if memory serves. So maybe she's gone on holiday.
Well, the thing is that lake monsters of different sorts are reported from all sorts of places across the world. And sometimes they are a similar sort of thing to what we believe the Loch Ness Monster is, and other times they're completely different.
To quote from our regular Los Angeles correspondent, Phil Leonis, the truth is out there. But let's talk more about Monster World, or Monster Hunter World, this Capcom incentive to actually locate a world-famous monster. What's it all about? How can our listener get involved with this possibility of winning £50,000?
Well, I'm very impressed with Capcom and their Monster Hunter series of games, because they are introducing a whole new generation to the idea that there are still animal mysteries to be solved across the globe, and which is why I decided to get involved with them when they asked me. And I think this is a very, very exciting challenge, because if you can get more details, by the way, if you go to on Twitter to @MonsterHunter, all one word. I'm still learning about Twitter. I mean, I'm very nearly 60, and social media confuses the living daylights out of me.
Oh, John, we'll get there in the end, I'm sure. Now, from your own experience, again, it's interesting, time-wise, if we look historically, during the Charles Darwin era and the mid 19th century and the era of the Victorian explorer and so on, there was this sense of discovering the new, the unusual, and to many people the Galapagos turtles, the giant turtles, that would have been seen bizarre, etc., quite apart from the finches and other sort of elements. Accordingly, I'm surprised to see that a mermaid is actually in the list of top 10 verified monsters, because I never thought of a mermaid necessarily as being monstrous, or have I just been Disneyfied over the years?
The stories of mermaids go back many, 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 many hundred years before Disney. And there, especially in the far west of Cornwall, there are carvings of what appear to be mermaids on the ends of church pews. Now, I think you probably agree with me, it would be unlikely for somebody who's a very devout churchgoer to put an image of something in a church that was just frivolous and the 16th century equivalent of Ariel from Disney.
Then again, I have actually seen some of the original broadsides from the 16th and 17th century where sailors have been rescued at sea by mermaids and then actually died just as they were about to tell the tale as well. But that's another line. In terms of your own experience, it would seem that you've actually found some evidence of big beasts in Devon now. How big are those beasts, John?
Now, the other week I took a party of journalists and some people from Capcom out basically is on a field trip so I could show them how we look for hair samples and how we look for footprints. And totally serendipitously, we found a skeleton of a sheep, which was a very large sheep. It was very large and fairly elderly, that had obviously been taken somewhere about a quarter of a mile away, because there are no sheep within a quarter of a mile. And it was taken to a thicket in the middle of an area of moorland and marsh, where there are no sheep. A study by one of our zoologists earlier last week showed that the body had been there no more than a month. There were no signs of it being butchered using, so there were no signs of knives or hatchets on it. It hadn't been butchered by people. It was too big for a fox to have taken. It wasn't taken by a badger, because if a badger takes a animal, it's just like it's gone through a kitchen blender. It's completely mushed, because badgers have got fantastically grinding jaws. And our biologist, we're working on the hypothesis at the moment that it was taken by either a large lynx or a small melanistic leopard. And there have been sightings of both brown and black mystery cats in the area. And what we've done now, we've put up cameras that work, trail cameras that work by being triggered by movement. And we've put them up in this thicket, and we're leaving it for a few months to see what we can find.
Historically, mankind hasn't really had a great deal of success when it comes to the survival rates of new and exotic species, as the dodo would attest to in many ways. Might it be that actually it would be best for the survival rates of these monsters, should they exist, if they actually stay away from man?
That's a very good question. I mean, the most savage and most monstrous creature in the world is us.
Indeed.
Because we are the only species that kills for fun, whereas no other species in creation does that. But I think that it's important to understand what these creatures are and how they fit in within the ecosystem, so we can understand the glorious synergy of Mother Nature better than we do.
Absolutely, and to many folk back in the day, I presume the blue whale would have been equally mythical. We'll just run through those top 10 very fine monsters that are actually around. Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Mongolian Death Worm, possibly fairly small to actually find and locate, I would have thought, actually. But
It's supposed to be about 4 foot long, Death Worm.
Well, it was more like the Lambton Worm then, perhaps. Mermaids, Earth Hounds, the Yeti, Chupacabras. I wasn't familiar with the Chupacabra. Is that a South American entry into the whole sequence?
Now, the Chupacabra is something that I've actually studied quite closely. I've written 2 books about it. And the first Chupacabra attacks were on the Canovanas Plateau in Puerto Rico in 1995. There were attacks on sheep and goats, and Chupacabras just means in Spanish the goat sucker. And goat, chupa is suck. And the name was coined by a mate of mine, a guy called Ishmael Aguayo, who's the deputy head of the civil defense in the city. And the killings continued alongside sightings of a strange creature that walked semi-upright and had spikes down its back. Now, lots of people have heard that story and immediately assumed that we're talking about an alien that came from nowhere in order to terrorize the planet and wreak havoc amongst the world of men. But there's actually no evidence at all that the thing that walks half upright and spiky actually is responsible for the killings. And what I believe the spiky thing is a type of porcupine that was probably brought to Puerto Rico in slave ships from West Africa, who brought porcupines and other local animals as basically bushmeat in order to feed their cargo. And if some of them are still alive when the slave ships hit Puerto Rico, it's quite likely they could have escaped. And if you look at some of the pictures of African porcupines that walk partially upright and compare them with the fantastical pictures like the one drawn by Jorge Martin of the chupacabras as an alien, it suddenly starts to make an awful lot more sense.
Absolutely. We haven't really got time to look at the flying snake of Namibia or the Yowie or the Cornish Owlman. But if folk are interested in being in with a chance of winning this £50,000 reward, all you need to do is contact monsterhunter@hopeandglorypr.com. That's monsterhunter@hopeandglorypr.com. You can play this particular interview back. It'll be up as a podcast before too long as well. John Downs, two final questions for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I've enjoyed it immensely. And if you ever want me to come on again, of course I will.
Well, I think that's, you've already answered the second question, John, and I'm sure we will be in touch. John Downs, Director of the Centre for Fortean Zoology and the world's largest cryptozoological research organisation. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Monster and Automatic taking us out, of course, of the feature with the director of the Centre for Fortean Zoology. That would be Monster Hunter John Downs. Thank you, John. And thank you, Shaley, for joining us on the two-hour extravaganza we had today.
Nice.
Where we've once again pushed those boundaries, I think, fairly successfully from the talks between Gibraltar and Spain via Gabriela Peralta, via Phil Leonis in Los Angeles, and the ever-blossoming authentic connection between Richard Fitzwilliams, film critic in London, and Phil Leonis in Los Angeles, followed by Tyneside Ruminations of Ian Lennox, who seemed to be in fairly good form. Then, let us not forget Susie Carlisle, director of the Lincoln Tea and Coffee Company, who paved the way for Time to Talk Day with the awesome Joe Lochran. And then, of course, the concluding John Downes Monster Hunter. Quite a show, I think.
Definitely. We've packed a lot in this morning.
And even more will be coming in future weeks as we continue to bring you the very best at Siren Radio. As we said today, lots of great stuff coming up, lots of music coming after the news. And then, as I say, Chris Clarkson back later on this afternoon. And then Sound and Nick's Vision. And we'll be back with the Midweek Drive on Wednesday with Tessa Snart. She'll be back with us. Hannah Brown will be back with us. And Shaylee will be back with us on Thursday morning for the Midweek Drive morning edition.
I will indeed.
Take us up to the news. Let me see a little smidgen of Hayley Steinfeld under Lesso. Let me go, please. And then Ed Sheeran and Beyonce will have the perfect duet. So that's it. Time to say farewell. After three, one, two, three.
Farewell.